Greetings. You've entered into the Paracosmos, where anything is possible and everything is probable. My name's Lacey, and everybody owes me personally an apology. All the Gambit haters owe me personally, Lacey, an apology.
And I'm Leah, and I am a Gambit apologist now. RIP and bless up, I think, tall-ish.
Baby, he's pretty tall.
Sweet angel,
yeah,
baby.
He's tall. He got a little heel in his boots.
He appears,
you know what I'm saying,
to be like a tall fella, but everyone appears tall when they stand next to the Wolverine.
His hair adds a good 3 inches.
At least a good 3 inches.
Yeah.
So
his hair
off the wall, real quick. What did you feel about Gambit's hairstyle for the newest episode? How are we feeling?
I actually
about
love
the
it.
Slick back,
you mean
ponytail?
The
ponytail?
You mean episode five?
Yeah, episode five, the most current.
It's not like, yeah, it's not my favorite look, but at the same time, like, I get why he does it. It's kind of like that debonair, old school James Bond.
It was throwing
like,
out a lot of founding father.
With the little rat tail in the back. Yeah, ponytail. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that they should have just
done episode one.
The Remy special hair, you know.
The mullet and the rat tail.
Yeah,
mullet
us up.
All right, so obviously we are talking about X-Men 97 today, at least the first five episodes, as there's more to come, but we wanted to kind of jump on this because a lot has happened, really, like a ton has happened. So we didn't want to get too behind when the season was over, because that would probably be too much to talk about in an episode. So this is spoilers for episodes 1 through 5 of the first season of X-Men 97. So if you haven't watched it yet, or you don't want to be spoiled, don't listen right now. Go watch it. Please go watch it. It's the highest rated Marvel thing right now. Yes. It is the highest out of everything. It beat Loki. It beat WandaVision. It has beat Endgame. It's beat everything.
Yeah, I think
this
it's got like a
the Marvel thing.
Yeah,
to
it's
watch.
Like a is it a 9.8 overall rating so far on IMDb? It premiered with like I think a 10 out of 10. Its first two episode premiere with IMDb.
Yeah, it's just insane. Mm-hmm. Insane. It's perfect. It really is. It's perfect.
Yeah, for what it's doing and what it could have been, this is the absolute most perfect thing that they could ever give us.
Yeah. In fact, it even, like, one of my friends said this, and I kind of agree, like, not that I don't want to see live action, but I feel like it's going to be difficult to do live action.
Didn't I tell you
X-Men.
That, like, a week ago, or was it after episode 5?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Well, you told me that, and then my other friend Austin said that, and I was like, honestly, this is so good.
Well,
this
sets
animation.
Such a good story and a good tone and a good pacing with the characters.
Absolutely.
And then we're getting the characters a little deeper now than we did in previous X-Men iterations. So I think it's going to be very, very difficult for them now to go back and give us a live action. They would have to cast it perfectly.
Yeah, it would have,
and then the
everything
story
about
itself,
it would have to
like
be top
story
tier.
It would have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. It would have to be none of this, like, and let's introduce Jean Grey, Psychic, Phoenix, you know, like none of that again. I would honestly be okay too if they didn't focus so heavily on Storm. If that doesn't make me a bad person. But like, you know, like our core X-Men characters, I feel like we can just jump straight in and like, here they are. Versus, like, let's do an introduction and put the team together type style. So,
yeah.
I don't know. They're going to have a tough time with that one. But, you know, if they slap that little X theme on there, then I'm going to be in that seat.
Don't get me wrong. There's anything with the words X-Men on it, I'm going to go watch. 100%.
As soon as you hear that, you don't hit skip. We don't skip.
It's just, I'm
here. You watch the intro every episode.
So this is five episodes out right now. So we're going to talk about them. Let's talk about so episode 1, 2, and 3 kind of went all together.
Yep.
I would say.
We got that double
premiere.
It was kind of like, and then episode three kind of followed directly after it.
Quick synopsis is just that, you know, episode one is kind of reintroducing the team, which is our core team from the original show, except we got Morph back.
He's here.
I love Morph.
He is here and he is.
I did not there. Like Morph in the original. I love Morph. Morph's gay for Wolverine. For and that's all sure. I'm saying.
Have you seen the stuff on?
Stood in the showers and was looking him up and down.
You want me to scratch your back or something like that?
Yeah. That wasn't subtle.
And then he turned into Jean at one point. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Morph gay for Wolverine. Absolutely. So we get that. We get the introduction to the characters. Also, amazing, like, opening action scene with Cyclops falling from the sky, but saving himself.
I texted
himself.
You immediately after I saw that and was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, and I love Cyclops so much in this moment.
Yeah.
I repeat, only in this moment. Because it is ruined later on.
Big time.
But that is like the coolest thing ever. And then when he hits that ground and he's like, to me, my X-Men. I was just like,
yeah.
I would fall to the ends of the flat earth. If you told me the earth was flat, I would believe you.
So I think the first episode is really great at setting the tone and also kind of showing how the the X-Men team is using their powers in new ways, right? Mm-hmm. In the old show, it was very straightforward. Cyclops would just do his blast. Jean would just do her telekinesis.
Using his blast to like propel him in different directions.
Yep. Gambit and Wolverine were working together.
Seen that before with like people relying on Gambit and using his abilities and stuff. And then
to power them
up.
Jean
would focus out in the field for this, which was honestly kind of nice, kind of refreshing.
Well, she couldn't be because
that's not Jean Grey.
She's pregnant. That's right. Remember, we recorded the trailer, and everyone, you can go back and listen. I literally said that doesn't make sense if that's Jean. It has to be Madeline.
Been saying this for months.
I was like, that doesn't make sense. It has to be Madeline because Jean's not the one that gets pregnant. Madeline is, and I think they handled that story really well.
I do
honestly.
I also saw a little like theory video earlier today that was like,
we love a theory,
kind of explaining that like they went back and looked at a couple of scenes from the original X-Men animation, and the creators of that original X-Men animation also tweeted out that they were dropping hints about Madeline being Cable's mother in the original 90s series, with some of the psychic parallels and the dimensions that Jean would see. It was actually Madeline in the background and not Jean Grey. And they did the exact same thing that this does, where they distinctly showed that difference with Jean Grey wearing a ponytail and Madeline not. And I was like, that is very...
No, Madeline does wear the ponytail.
She does it a couple of times, but for the majority of the episodes, her hair was down, and Jean's is always up in the ponytail. And the writer of the original series tweeted out that, like, they wanted to do that storyline the exact same way that we just got it, but in the 90s on, like, Fox in the morning, you know, cartoons, they were not allowed to do that.
So that's another thing and why this is so good. Like, the original is great.
Creative freedom.
Yes. And the thing about X-Men is that it's dark. It is. Because it is literally, for those of you that don't know, or maybe you're a new X-Men fan or you need a reminder, X-Men was created, I believe, by Stan Lee, if I remember.
Stan Lee, Jack Kirby.
He was the original creator. They created this in response to the civil rights movement. So the mutants represented the minorities, and even Professor X and Magneto represented Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, because they both are fighting for the same thing, but different ways they're going about it. So it was supposed to be very parallel to that. And even now, it is still parallel to everything going on with all the different civil rights movements we have. You know, the mutants are still the representation of minorities being stepped on and hated for no reason, which is very clearly shown in the show. So it is funny to see all the internet discourse of like, oh, it's too woke. Like, are you X-Men have been feel like obviously you don't know anything about X-Men mm-hmm. to like sit here and say it's woke, because no, that's just X-Men.
That's just what they were. Yes. And like anytime that there was a protest, just... like they immediately turned it around into an issue of an X-Men comic. To like, and yeah. Like, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were pretty open about it, of like, this is why we did it. And it was our direct response to people being absolutely stupid. So they mirrored it. Like, they literally just mirrored things.
Yeah. Look how insane you are when you attack and want to hurt other people.
Don't you think it's silly that you're stupid you look. Just an idiot like this? And everything holds up today, which is insane.
Yep, 100%.
That, like, an issue from the 70s would translate so well into 2024. Anything from the 90s, same thing. Like, still seeing the exact same things going on, and people still just don't get it. And then this new animation comes out, and they're still, oh, why do you have to feature Morph so much? Like, oh no, you're going to do something to Wolverine. Oh no. And it's like, you've clearly never paid attention.
Yeah.
You know, to any of this.
People who aren't actual X-Men fans. But so the first three episodes has a lot to do with, we get Magneto introduced to the team, because he pretty much shows up and says, Charles left the X-Men to me because he trusted me. I'm here now. Yeah, now you're my X-Men. Which of course Cyclops isn't the biggest fan of, but neither is Gambit.
Oh yeah, because there's a little hanky panky going on with the streets Rogue. And Master of Magnetism.
Yes, because Rogue and Magneto can touch, which is like crazy.
Because I've been seeing things, it's like, oh, Gambit finds out that Rogue has been hooking up with Magneto since he came back, because you know that scene at the end of episode two where Gambit sees her coming out of his room. Maybe it was episode one, I don't remember. It's implied that like they've been kind of like doing it since he's been back, is what people believe. Do you think that they were, or do you think that there was just like discussions and old Gambit is just having to deal with himself?
I don't think they were full on getting it on. I think that at most there was maybe some making out and some like touching, but I don't think there was like full on, you know what I mean? I don't think there was full on. If that makes sense. I don't think there was.
So in my little innocent brain that is just like, please leave my sweet baby angels alone. I was just like, they're just discussing maybe getting back together. Like Rogue wouldn't do that. And then you get this new episode 5. And
yeah. I'm just like,
you broke up with him.
Well, no, although.
And then immediately, same day, 4 hours later, in front of him, are up there doing your jazz hands. Like. For the streets.
Well, wait. Okay, we'll get there. So, first three episodes, they deal with, Madeline Pryor, who is the Goblin Queen. And obviously, she's rightfully pissed because they have a son together. Mm-hmm. And Cyclops is like, I care about you. But also, Jean's back.
She has fainted again.
Like, yeah, she's back. So, a lot of confusion happens there. But it pretty much ends with Sinister getting a hold of Cable, which is their son.
Yep, Nathan.
And I think it was the Technovirus.
Yes, the Technovirus. Sinister gives it to him.
Yep, Sinister gives Cable the Technovirus because he's gonna like mutate him and do some crazy stuff. They save him, but he still has the Technovirus. So Bishop says, I can take him to the future where we have a cure for this, but I can only take him. So they have to give up their son. And of course, Cyclops doesn't want to do that because he was left behind by his father and he doesn't want his son to grow up without him. But there's really no choice if they want Nathan to live. So they, as parents, decide, they eventually, quote, make up, and they, as parents, decide to send Nathan to the future. So we lose baby Nathan from the show for a bit. And kind of after that, it takes a break.
It does. It kind of breaks off, like, from that heavy storyline of like a Goblin Queen.
We get a lighter.
Yeah.
We get a lighter episode in episode 4, though. I will say it says part 1. Yes. So we know a part 2 is coming.
I do believe that episode 6, is a life death part 2. So we're cycling back around to that. The X original show was very notorious for doing this also, just kind of breaking up things a little bit. It didn't feel so like, here's a story, boom. It becomes episodic, you know, like, here's your filler.
Yes.
I will say, like, comments about the first three episodes, I did really, really like them. That third episode was basically like a made-for-TV horror movie.
Super good. Yeah,
there were some actual scary scenes in there that were, they scared my five-year-old watching that.
When Gambit sees a vision of Rogue and Magneto from the, what is it called? The Wildlands?
Yeah, the Savage Lands.
The Savage Lands, thank you. From the Savage Lands, but they're like,
his whole reaction was both like so sad, but also so funny. And he was just like, Gambit's eyes will never unsee this.
Yeah, like, oh no, he's traumatized.
He just walks in, he goes, say it ain't so.
Yeah, I just like, oh my God. So
one of the things that I have seen some chatter about the first three episodes with, which I do agree with, is how quick Jean Grey clone just threw out at the end of that, call me Madeline Pryor. And I'm just like, was this locked and loaded? Like, she was already thinking about changing her name. And then when she starts like hoodooing out with Mr. Sinister, she's like, I am the Goblin Queen.
That part I'm more like, where did you where get was that from?
Like, where did you get that? Even, you know, like that's
even
a two
in the
episode.
Original comics.
Yeah, like that's
a two even in the original
discovery.
Comics, it's like a wild, like, it's like, where is this coming like, from? Why are you a
goblin? What makes you a where goblin? Yeah, what makes you a goblin queen? Like, what are you like a goblin queen? Like, I got minions? Or are you like a goblin queen? Like, you're goblin?
Yeah, I don't know if that's ever, I could be wrong, but I don't know if that's ever explained in the comics either. It was just, it was just kind of like accepted.
We were just like, okay, sure. Cause where did like Cyclops get Cyclops from? You know, he's got two eyes technically. So, and he shoots lasers at both of them. So where are you getting Cyclops from?
Where did Gambit get Gambit from?
I know that's true.
Well, that's pretty.
But where'd Rogue get Rogue from? Okay. Anna Marie. Like.
That's true. You know?
So I guess
I will say when she did say I'm the Goblin Queen, I don't know if you ever watched Sailor Moon growing up. But there's an episode where Chibi Moon is like grown up in the future and she's like, I am Black Lady.
Yes.
And it gave the same vibe. I was
the little
like,
transformation that she does too from like Madeline Jean Grey mommy to the Goblin Queen was very Sailor Moon. It was very, very in the air with the green
stuff. It's like
stuff.
100% was giving Sailor Moon the whole time. I was like, cool.
I was like, I'm still here for you, this, but like, you're kind of taking me out just a little bit.
Yeah, like that was the one part that I was like, okay. But I don't think there was any good way to do it because the comics made her Goblin Queen. So like how else do you explain it?
Yeah, and I know that they have to like say these things in dialogue. Like they have to say it out loud for the people that are not aware of either the previous show or the actual comics. Because I would have just been like, I won't say it, you know, like we'll just know that that is the Goblin Queen. And let people know that. And then that's really like one of my only like complaints about the show so far is some of the dialogue. Like, I don't need it. I don't need Magneto going, I, the master of magnetism, am confused why you brought me here. Like, shut up.
I think that that's for like newer.
Yeah, it's like they have to do that. You know, like they have to put that in there. But I'm like,
they're bringing up to pace people that don't know.
But I'm like, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
What Magneto is.
You know.
It's literally his name.
So let's talk about episode 4 before we jump to 5, because 5 is going to be a discussion. So episode 4, Motendo, or Life Death Part 1. Mm-hmm. So this is two stories kind of at the same time. Storm, in one of the earlier episodes, it was episode 2, she gets zapped by the Exterminator?
Yep. The Exterminator.
Yep. The Exterminator. Yep. He zaps her with a weapon that removes her mutant powers.
He was aiming
so she's
from
human.
Magneto too. So Storm took that hit from Magneto.
Storm
which
took
we'll
the
talk
hit.
About my little theory at the end of this. But she took that hit for
so.
Him, loses her powers, does the most dramatic I can't feel the wind. That makes you so sad for her. And and then this is Life Death Part 1.
Yep. So she is out and about in what looks like a, not a countryside, like countryside, but like kind of canyony countryside area, and with Forge. Yeah. She's hanging out with Forge, and Forge is attempting to figure out how to get her mutant powers back. There's definitely like a little romantic thing going on.
He literally tells her he loves her. What do you mean there's kind of?
Well, okay. Like, near the end, yeah. But I mean, like, the build-up is flirty. But yeah, he does. And then she slaps him, which is really funny. Because she finds out that he made a weapon for anti-mutant people. The wrist, the cuffs.
Yeah, the cuffs. The wrist cuffs. The power absorbing.
The power blockers or whatever. Yeah.
Whatever they are.
Yeah, when you have them on, you can't use your powers.
He helped create those.
Yeah, which is wild.
Bad.
So she didn't like that. The other part of this episode is Motendo, which, real fun play on Nintendo, since Jubilee and Sunspot are playing on a gaming device. Mm-hmm. They're playing an X-Men game. Well, Mr. Mojo pulls them in to the video game and, you know, tells Jubilee, well, you can live the glory days of the X-Men and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, obviously what I think episode 4 was, for at least half of it, was like, oh, let me, guys, come on, remember all these really fun X-Men adventures we went on? Is essentially what he was doing for Jubilee is what the writers were doing for the audience.
Yeah, they were like, this is the stuff you can see if you go back and watch the first, like, what is it, 5 or 6 seasons of the
X-Men show. Yeah, here's all the stuff that already happened, and oh, Jubilee knows what to do because she already lived through this, so she's like the star. But eventually she doesn't want to anymore, and she meets like a different video game coded version of herself, and they take down Mojo. We also get an introduction to Spiral, our little 6-armed baddie, who I love that they kept her same attitude of, I really don't want to work for Mojo, and then she gets away. Yeah. And I'm like, yes! Like, cool. She is away. She's going to come back for sure. Like, absolutely. So that happens. It's basically a whole nostalgia trip, which is really cool. And then Life Death, how that ends is, at first we thought it was the Shadow King.
Okay.
That was coming for Storm.
I did not have any theories about this.
Well, when the red eyes like appeared, like, come after her, we were like, oh, is it the Shadow King? Because he has a lot to do with Storm and Rogue and Gambit and a lot of the X-Men. So we were like, oh, shoot, but it's not. At least it doesn't look like the Shadow King when that beast thing appears, like an owl thing. Yeah, which you hear an owl through the episode, too. She mentions that the same owl is circling them. Yeah. So we know something is coming, and it's like this giant owl creature that like takes Storm. So that's why we're going to get a part 2, because we don't really know what happens at the end of that.
Yeah, it ends so, very much on a cliffhanger this little thing getting Storm. And then throwing Forge out, is that right? Like, he just gets kaboom.
I think he's just pushed to the side. Kaboom.
Like, literally flicked off screen, and then, like, we don't know what happened. And neither do the X-Men, because at the end of episode 2, Storm leaves the X-Men because she's human now.
Yep. None of the X-Men know what's going on.
I will say episode 4 is also the lowest rated so far, with a 7.2 out of 10, which is still pretty high.
Say that my theory on that is because they did a nostalgia trip, so that episode was purely for people who'd watched the first series. Yeah. Like, it was purely for the little kids that woke up and watched Fox cartoons or whatever, you know, wherever you watched it was for them. So like, that's really hard to do an episode like that to get a high rating when you also have new viewers, because they're not going to get that same nostalgia it's not going to hit the same.
Yeah, I think that they should have either done like a full episode of just Jubilee or a full episode of just Storm, to kind of like,
yeah,
if they wanted to keep that rating up. But 7.2 is still not low. You know, like, that is still very high.
Still good.
For an episode of an animated show on top of that. I do like Jubilee. I'm excited to see more of Jubilee. We've seen a lot so far, so I'm excited about that. But
I'm actually liking Jubilee more in this season than the original.
I like her in the comics a lot. She tends to be in a lot of the things that I read as one of the central characters. Just it kind of works out that way. So I enjoy her. And I definitely enjoy her more 100%. Now. So, and then she does, the original series, it was rough. Yeah, and she does say some dialogue every once in a while that, like, throws back to that original series of, like, oh, these Sentinels attacked me in a mall once. And that's exactly how the first series kicked off, you know, in the mall with the Sentinels and stuff.
And they save her.
They do save her. The X-Men save her. So still leading up to episode 5, we're in a good place.
Yeah, we're in a good headspace. Everyone's feeling nostalgic. Everyone's feeling light. You know, the first dark arc has ended with the first 3 episodes. We're moving on. Real quick, before we completely move on, Wolverine and Jean Grey kissing?
Oh, yeah.
They kissed. It was weird. Also, Jean kissing Wolverine, but then getting mad at Cyclops for
having a telekinetic connection Cyclops. With the
Madeline.
Baby mother, the Goblin Queen.
Yeah. Wild. Like, how dare you psychically connect with your baby mama when that's our thing? Also, I'm gonna go make out with Wolverine.
Right. Like, and then just being like, that is not right. Like,
yeah, Wolverine's like that's what he's been. I was like,
for a millennia, you know, and then just
I didn't think Wolverine would back up, but he did.
So I'm just like,
he did.
If Wolverine is backing off, then Jean Grey, you're for the streets right now, like.
For the streets right now.
You can't be mad at Cyclops. That's his baby mama. Like, they had
Scott's always been for the streets, though.
Scott,
let's be honest.
The street, like
Scott just is the street.
The street.
Honestly.
So, like, you got to think too, though, from Cyclops' point of view, he had been with Madeline for at least 11 months.
At minimum.
At maximum, a year. You know.
Yeah, because the issue is that Jean and Madeline,
they have no idea.
Besides the pregnancy, have the same memories.
Yeah, like that's where it ends, is everything is the same, and then the pregnancy. So it leads you to believe that at least for under 2 years, he's been with Madeline. Long enough to Queen Goblin some stuff and getting pregnant, and that takes some time. And then, you know, have an actual baby together, and then a couple weeks later, baby is snatched. So
that baby was drawn like a 6-month old baby.
Yes, he was.
That was not a newborn.
Sometimes this, like, certain scenes in this animation will get a little weird. Episode 1, when they go to the club to get Sunspot back, Jubilee's animation when they were dancing was very strange.
I agree. Like, I know exactly what you're talking about too.
But back to the streets.
Back to the streets. Oh, you mean Scott? Scott Summers. Episode 5.
Remember it.
Oh no. Are we doing this? I'm not ready.
Remember it, because that is when Scott goes to the streets. Jean is for the streets. Rogue is on the streets. Like,
Magneto's in the streets.
Saved the streets. Like,
Gambit wants the streets
so bad. He wants to be that stop sign at the end of the corner. And instead, he is like 2 towns over in the wrong address. Like,
oh, buddy.
Who would have thought
Gambit the only one not
getting any?
It was
so real, though, when he was like, you didn't want to put a label on this, and I respected that. Oh, motherfucker.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. So let's start from episode 5. Yep. Rogue and Magneto are going to Genosha, which is Magneto's safe haven for mutants. It's a whole cultural society. And I saw somebody point this out online. That what was really cool about episode 5 is you get a look into the actual culture that would have been created had it only been a mutant culture. Like, the way things are done, even down to like how things are sold or what's being sold, is so different because these are people with mutant powers. Yep. So super well thought out episode. And then of course we get our furry blue boy.
He appears. I was so happy to see it. Mr. Kurt Wagner.
Yes, because Gambit insists on joining Rogue and Magneto. In Genosha. So he goes along, and Magneto, essentially, they get there, and he has Kurt take Rogue and Gambit around Genosha because he's been living there. And he goes off to do political stuff. And so we're having a good time. They're showing him around. And of course, Rogue's up ahead. And Kurt's just like, you got a bad poker face, which I loved. And, teased Gambit.
I loved that Kurt showed up. I also was like kind of loving that Magneto was just over Gambit being around, because he's been trying to, you know, pave the streets with Rogue. And
trying to pave the streets.
Trying to pave the streets. I did love that. And then I loved that old Kurt was just like, let's go, my friends. And Gambit's just there like, I'm watching you. And Rogue, no idea. So oblivious why Gambit would want to come.
Oh, yeah. Kurt comes, he's showing him around, he calls out Gambit on the way he's looking at Rogue, because obviously he's admiring Rogue. Like, we know, this boy is smitten as a kitten. He is just, everything he wants is Rogue.
And Kurt's just like, why don't you just, like,
do it? Just marry her. Just marry her.
He's like, just do it. It's been, like, 20 years, dude. Just marry her.
And he's like, oh, we don't, me scoundrels, like, we don't get the
ain't
white.
Ain't no time for love when you're sinning. Yeah. Gambit, shut sin. Up.
Like, whoa, okay, we gotta talk about
you're
that.
You're so, when any other character, like, when Magneto says his Magneto lines of, like, the master of magnetism, I'm so annoyed. I'm just so annoyed immediately. I'm like, you're a fool. But when Gambit's like, I'm too busy sinning for love, I'm like, that just makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But when Kurt was like, there is no love without sin because there is no love without forgiveness, I was like, oh, I was like, there's my wise Kurt. There
my,
he is.
My guy, my little monk guy.
There's my wisdom, Kurt. Yes. You know? Like, and when he said that, I was just like, it's so true, though. When you're in a long relationship, you really do get to the point where, like, It's just fact. You see it in TV shows, you see it in movies, you see it in every media. Like, you're gonna hurt each other because you're with each other for such a long time. But, like, that's the difference. Now you've got the choice to forgive one another and to work and, like, come together. I don't know. Just when he said it, it, like, made a lot of sense. I was like, of course.
It's real. Like, it's a real thing.
Yeah. And it's the real nitty gritty of a relationship.
Yeah.
100%. And
so this show is throwing out some, like, real good lines.
Yeah.
In between some of the Magneto things, it's throwing out some, even Magneto said some hot stuff
in this episode. When the reporter lady was like, oh, so
they let terrorists become leaders.
So, well, you let,
like,
your...
You have no problem with leaders becoming terrorists. And I was like, damn.
Oh, when he said that, I was like, I personally think that was a direct reference to the current state of the world.
Oh, for,
like,
sure. For sure. They always
for
do that.
Sure.
I saw,
like, he...
a breakdown of this, and they said that the explosions in this and the way that, like, this is framed and shot side by side, like, mirrors some of the recent events in, like, the last couple years with bombings, and then also mirrored 9/11 footage from survivors, which it did, you know. So they're definitely throwing in some of that real world
stuff
that they've always done.
We get to this point where, you know, they're all getting ready for, like, a gala and everything. Rogue comes out in her dress, which is inspired by the red one in the comics with her date with Gambit. And she, before getting ready, she goes to see Gambit, and he's already ready in his white tux, hair slicked back, and they pretty much talk, and she explains that Magneto's made an offer for her to be the queen.
To help run Genosha. Because that was a condition that he made, but not that the Council of Genosha and the United Nations made. They just offered him to be the leader of Genosha, basically.
Yeah, Magneto just wants Rogue to do it.
And
with
then he
him.
Just wanted that. He was like, well, to make it easier for you, what if I had an X-Men with me? They didn't even care about that. They just were like, we want the Master of Magnetism. I'm like, come on now.
Right.
And so weird that he would just be like, well, let me get an X-Man too. Is that going to make you feel better?
I think it was just an excuse, honestly.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure, an excuse.
It forced Rogue to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And so Rogue goes and has a conversation with Gambit. And Gambit, you know, like you said, Gambit's like, you never wanted to make things official.
You're for the streets. Like,
no, okay.
You're for the streets. I'm going to go find my blue boy.
That's not, oh my God.
That's what he said. That's what I heard.
That's not what he said.
He watched a different show.
He said that he played the scoundrel, and she was like, I played your share. You know, they pretty much acknowledge, we've had this flirty back and forth. We've never made it official, but now it can't be official. I'm going to be the queen of Genosha. I'm going to help run the mutants and this paradise like we've always wanted. And he says, well, then Gambit will stay your friend. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was the most heartwarming. Like, he was like, if I have to be in your life as a friend only, then that's fine. Like, he loves her so much that so long as he's in her life, it'll keep him satiated. Yeah. Like, is how deep his love runs.
This episode, Gambit was very mature and very thoughtful, because he was
big
also
time.
Like, Gambit's the only one asking questions. Like, why are apples $10? Why do they want Magneto? Why is Magneto the savior here when it was Charles' dream that got them here, you know?
Yeah.
It is a little suspect that Magneto is everywhere and that they would want him to be everywhere after years of conflict where he was literally a mutant terrorist.
Yep, 100%.
Very, very, very suspect. But I'm with Gambit. Like, Gambit asking questions.
Yeah, when no one else is.
Yeah, when no one else is. So he told her, "You're for the streets, girl." Like,
that's not what he said. So we get to the scene where Happy Nation by Ace Base plays.
Of course it is.
Because it's the number one tracking song right now, by the way.
Of course it is.
Yeah. So we get to the scene and finally Gambit watches as Magneto and Rogue touch skin to skin with their hands.
How offensive. How offended were you that she had the audacity to drop this Savage Land bomb on him? That other thing started happening, Remy. And we know what was happening, okay? We know. You're savage.
We understand. You're savage.
You're savage for the streets, damn it.
And, oh, my God.
And then just, like, the audacity, like, Magneto feels so smug. So smug. He's like,
Absolutely. He's like, I won. But here's the thing. Remy says some things go deeper than skin. And again, Rogue is dancing with Magneto. They have this beautiful romantic dance. They kiss at the end. And that's when Rogue, and Gambit's left the room by this point. That's when Rogue, when they kissed? Yes, of course. But it also made Rogue realize, shit, things are deeper than skin. I don't love Magneto. Just because I can touch him doesn't make it worth it. Yeah. So she goes to find Gambit, and that's when all hell breaks loose.
Good night, audience. See you next week at this same time.